Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Tell me about the hunger strike that you're on, Dr. Sadler. When did it start?
Yes, Phil. I've been on a hunger strike since last Friday. I've not received any coverage from the media, and I think it's fairly typical.
So you have not received any coverage at all, either local or national?
No, I would love national coverage. I would love local. I've had neither.
And why are you on a hunger strike, sir?
To protest this proposed illegal war in Iraq and to bring to the attention of people the proposed illegal war in Iraq. And I would appreciate some media coverage. We thought we would have some local television, and we have not.
Why do you suppose that is? I mean, I heard about you called us today, in fact, from Lucerne Hall there at Pasadena City College where you teach?
Actually, that was my student assistant.
All right, that was Candy Amber?
Yes.
All right, but you have not gotten any other media coverage?
No, I haven't. That's because the American people, I think, Phil, are afraid to pressure the media into covering the anti-war movement.
Afraid?
It's going on out there. I'm on a hunger strike because I'm against the war. And yet, the media has not called me up for an interview. The media has not called me for a taping. There hasn't been any. I sometimes ask myself if people even understand what the severity of what I'm going through is. I'm on a hunger strike. I could die. And no one, the American people, the media, no one cares. And the American people, I think, have been afraid to force the media into covering the anti-war movement as well.
All right. You want the news consumer to pressure the media into coverage. Isn't that right? You're not asking. You want the people out there to cover, to pressure the media into covering the anti-war movement and to cover your hunger strike.
Look, Mr. Harry, I'm doing it all. I see mothers driving children. I see teenagers making out. I see fathers driving to work. And that's fine. If I have to carry the burden of peace, I will. I realize that with moral superiority comes responsibility. However, I think they need to do their part and call the media outlets.
And all right, Dr. Sadler, you feel you're doing your part and everybody else is living their lives.
I'm on a hunger strike, and I'm going to say it for the third time. When you don't eat, you die. And I'm on a hunger strike, and everybody else is going to restaurants. Everybody else is going to the zoo. They go over here to Knott's Berry Farm and all of the other pursuits that families have. And I haven't eaten since Friday.
And you're not complaining about that?
Please, Mr. Henry, if I could interpret what I'm saying and not have you do that.
I'm sorry.
And what I'm saying is I would appreciate some media coverage of my hunger strike. The American people, the news consumers, don't care because they're not pressuring the news media.
Well, maybe it's because, sir, that...
And the other thing, too, Phil, is...
No, but maybe it's because they're doing exactly what you said. They're living their lives.
All it takes is a phone call to say to Fox News, to CNN, to the local news stations... Why isn't Dr. Sadler on? Why isn't the Dr. Jim Sadler show on the air? And flood the phone banks, and it would happen.
All right, I want to talk. You said something that I found interesting. You said that while you are on your hunger strike, the whole world goes ahead with its life. While you are on the hunger strike to protest the war with Iraq.
That is correct.
You said that's fine with you because with moral superiority comes responsibility. Why do you feel you're morally superior?
What I'm doing is a very, very courageous thing. I don't think it's wrong of me to insist on some recognition. I am on a hunger strike to end war in Iraq. I'm not stopping off at Starbucks. I'm not opening up a yoga studio. I'm not nursing a baby. I'm not on the phone closing a deal, and I'm not doing any other selfish, self-centered thing. I'm doing the most selfless act what a human being can do. I am starving myself for peace. And if I die on this hunger strike, and I am ready to die to keep America from going to war in Iraq, Mr. Henry, if I die, then the American people will have my blood on their hands.
That's dramatic.
I'm not intending drama, sir.
Dr. Sale, it's admirable, but blaming the American people, I don't think, is the way.
I'm not trying to be dramatic, sir. I am saying I would appreciate a news TV for the television station to come and interview me.
All right, Dr. Jim Sadler is with us. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. You said some very provocative things. You're on a hunger strike to protest the proposed war in Iraq. The American people are ignoring you, and so therefore the news media is ignoring you. The American people are afraid to express how they feel, and so on and so forth. You also said you are morally superior, because while the rest of the world is going about their selfish acts, you are on a hunger strike. Did I get that right?
Phil, you got it right with the normal amount of news commentator sarcasm.
I don't believe I was being sarcastic.
I heard it very distinctly, Phil. But I will tell you, I don't know if you know it or not, but there was a guy around about 60 years ago, and maybe you heard about him because he was in all the newspapers. His name was Gandhi. You heard about him?
Of course I have, sir.
All right. He was around not too long, and people came to his bedside to be blessed, and riots were stopped when he went on a hunger strike. He would stop riots when he went on a hunger strike. He went on long walks, and people would follow him. This was a great man, and he had all the newsreel cameras that would follow him around, and leaders of the world would seek out his counsel. And I'm on a hunger strike, and I sit here and do everything that Gandhi did. And no one, I haven't had a phone call in 3 days. I could be dead as far as my friends know. I'm not simply waving a banner that says no war. I am being murdered slowly for no war. Do you understand what I'm doing?
Well, you also said that if you die while on your hunger strike, the American people have blood on their hands.
Well, George Bush will have my blood on his hands, but he doesn't care. He has the blood of millions on his hands.
The hyperbole and the stretching of the truth knows no bounds with you, sir.
I'm not stretching the truth, but I don't want to argue with you, Phil. I'm simply saying that if I die of a hunger strike, then the American people will have murdered me. But you want to know something? They won't even care. They won't even care. I will die, and the American people won't even care. And they'll find me or whatever.
Okay, I have a question for you, Dr. Sadler. Seriously, when people go on hunger strikes politically, they have a support unit of some kind with them. They have people, friends, people who are issuing press statements, people who are supporting them medically. Is there a doctor with you?
No, sir, there's no doctor. I'm at the student union here in Lucerne Hall.
Do you have students with you?
I have my student advisor with me, and there are three other students with me. I'm not trying to say that I'm alone. I'm trying to say that
Well, who cares besides them?
That's just it. No one does.
Have you put a flyer out on campus? Have you spoken about this in your class?
Yes, sir, I have.
All right, you've put a flyer out, and you've spoken about it in your class, that you were going to go on a hunger strike.
Yes, sir.
And nobody's showing up.
No. And I don't blame them, because young people today don't react, you know, unless it's on the television. Everything's got to be on the television. It is up to the American people to notice me. Gandhi had people following him.
Forget it.
All right, I'm going to take a phone call, sir. Are you there with me, Dr. Sadler?
Yes.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Christy, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler.
Hi, I'm sitting here thinking how selfish and self-centered he's sounding, because he's saying why everyone should pay attention to him and be covering his small little story, when there are so many enormous issues going on in the world right now. Why would we care about his little plight?
Ma'am, first of all, I'd like to know what issue is larger than the potential war with Iraq that could affect hundreds of thousands of American soldiers and families. That's number one. Number two, I would say, I'm on a hunger strike. You understand?
What's more important is the U.S.'s position on the war, not your position on it. What's important is that there are many thousands, hundreds of thousands of men and women being deployed and leaving their families, for God's sake.
All right.
That you can't have a cheeseburger.
Ma'am, it's not about a cheeseburger. And maybe you never heard of Mahatma Gandhi, but he did hunger strikes, and thousands of people would come from everywhere, and I'm here, and I haven't eaten since Friday.
See, that's
right.
Not my concern. You cannot compare yourself to Mahatma Gandhi.
I think that...
Why not?
Well, sir, if I could jump in, Mahatma Gandhi...
No, I'd like the lady to answer, if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Hendry. It's an old teacher's trick, but I... Why not, ma'am?
Well, what are your other accreditations? What else do you have to go along with your name?
I'm against the war with Iraq, which hasn't...
Not myself, but join millions of other people. So
okay.
You're still not unique.
I don't... ma'am, you're familiar with a hunger strike, correct?
Yes.
You don't eat. You literally don't eat.
But that's your choice, and you're trying to make people feel bad for you. You say, you die. That's your choice. You might die. Who's going to die? It's probably that four-month-old baby who belongs to the man who chose to go to war rather than stay home with his child. That's a choice. That's what should be covered in the news.
And so the American...
Not you and Amber Candy, or whoever your assistant name is that sounds like a stripper.
Well, I'll ignore that statement.
Well, okay. I mean, she's got an unusual name. She's not a stripper.
She is one of my history students, a young lady who's working on her PhD, and I would ask the lady to apologize if I thought it would do any good. But I'll tell you this much.
I will apologize. I just thought that was kind of a funny name.
Her full name is Candace.
It was just one more reason why this is kind of a funny story.
You know something? Okay, so you just want to stick a knife in me, and the American people want to stick a knife in me, and I'll die. Because Mahatma Gandhi, Mr. Hendry.
We know about Mahatma Gandhi. We're trying to find out more about you.
And you can't find out no more about me if the news people don't interview me.
Can I tell you something? I don't want to see you on my news.
I'm sorry?
I don't want to see you on my news.
Why? Because I'm on a hunger strike. Why wouldn't you?
Why would we want to see that? Why would we want to see that? No, you can't even get kids on your own campus to go.
I am not eating. Do you understand what that means? That means no pizza, no fried food, no popcorn, none of the things, Christy, that you may have in your home, or you, Mr. Haney, in your home.
And by the way, my name is Hendry.
I forgive me, but I'm not having none of that.
Right. But,
good.
Okay,
that's fine.
But you understand, there are so many other things that the military men are not having.
Ma'am, they're eating. They are eating. They're eating their MRIs. They're eating stew or whatever they give them. I was in the Army. I know what the MRIs are delicious. They have a great many things. But I'm on a hunger strike. Just like Mahatma Gandhi did, and nobody cares.
Sir, I suspect the reason why no one cares is the anti-war movement in the United States is way overblown. There are not that many people in it. It's nowhere near what it was during the Vietnam years, that most Americans are in favor of this action, and nobody gives a crap about your hunger strike.
Even if I die.
Absolutely. Because that's your choice.
Look, I don't want you to die. I think it would be ignorant for you to do what you do.
So you're slapping me in the face.
Let me give you some friendly advice. Why don't you stay alive and fight the good fight for the rest of your life? What the hell are you going to do, man, by starving yourself to death?
If I can get enough Americans to follow my lead, then there won't be a war in Iraq. Why can't you understand that? How can you spit on me, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King?
Now we're comparing ourselves to Martin Luther King.
I am not comparing myself. I'm saying they use the same... Forget it.
All right, Christy, I'm sorry. Thank you for your call. 1-800... Are you there, sir?
Yeah.
Right, I won't go on with this if you're there, sir.
I'm right here.
1-800-449-8686. Dr. Jim Sadler is at Lucerne Hall at Pasadena City College on day 5 of a hunger strike to protest the proposed military action in Iraq. He has called my show tonight to say that he has not gotten one interview from the news media, not one television station has come to interview him, not one member of the print media has come to talk to him, and he is angry, he finds it insulting, and he thinks that if the American people don't put pressure on the news outlets to interview him, they will murder him, George Bush will be murdering him, and he will die on his hunger strike. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Car dealers in our next life.
And now more on the Phil Hendry Show.
Dr. Jim Sadler is with us. He is a professor of history at Pasadena City College, professor.
I'm currently, Mr. Hendry, I'm working at Southwest College, but I am doing studying here at Pasadena City College.
You are telling us you're on a hunger strike since last Friday. How is your health, by the way?
My health is good. We proposed this action for much longer than just a few days. I am trying to garner as much media attention now because I'm still relatively able to communicate. But the body, once it goes without food for a few, for over 10 days, communication, muscle, oxygenation of muscles, etc., becomes very difficult. I want to say that I have done everything to try to keep this war from happening. I've done everything I could do to get the respect that Gandhi got, and I guess I don't get to have that. Well, I hope the American people are happy when I die, because they'll have had a hand in murdering Gandhi and me and all the other ones, too. And I think that's wrong, and I think the war proposed against Iraq is wrong, and I'd like to give my phone number out if I could.
We can do that later on in the hour, sir.
Thank you.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Cindy, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Dr. Jim Sadler is my guest. Yes Cindy,
sir.
Go ahead.
Okay. First off, if you're on, how many people's on this hunger strike?
How many people are on it?
Yes, sir.
Currently, myself is the only one.
Okay.
Right, currently.
You're sitting here saying that if you die, that it's the president's fault. It's the people's fault.
Yes, I do believe that, Cindy, given the opportunity for them to call the local Fox News channels, CNN, NBC, and others to
okay,
get...
Well, let me... Not to interrupt you, but let me ask you this. Okay, we have fought everybody else's wars because they needed our help. Okay, so now we have terrorism, and this time it's to the limit. Okay, they wipe out 3,000 of our people, and our government is going over there to protect us. In other words, we the people. So they're not going over there just for me. They're not going over there just for you. They're going over there for everybody.
All right,
and
but could I ask you to call your local news affiliate to cover the hunger strike that I'm on? I understand what you're saying.
Didn't you hear what she said? All right, Cindy, would you hold on? Because I'd like to hear more of what you have to say, but we're up against a news break, all right? And Dr. Sadler, you hang on, too.
But I wanted her to call.
Just hold on. 1-800-449-8686. Dr. Jim Sadler's on a hunger strike against the war in Iraq. Phil Hendry Show, be right back.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Is it the media's responsibility to cover every single anti-war or even pro-war demonstration? On the line with me is Dr. Jim Sadler. He is at the student union. I believe it's the student union at Lucerne College out there in Pasadena. He is on a hunger strike, and you are on day four, correct, sir?
I've been on the hunger strike, Phil, since Friday. Something that is occurring right now, you might be interested in this. The students have been doing this for the last several days, and I think it shows the depth to which the media, and I do blame you and you people in the media for this, the depths to which the media will go. The students have come into the union now and are cooking. They're having some kind of food that they're cooking. And the media is has been alerted to this, and this is the kind of thing they'd be interested in.
So the kids have come in and they're cooking food there?
They are cooking dinner, and that is to try and humiliate me.
Why don't you get up and leave that area?
First of all, because this is where the university has granted me permit to demonstrate. Secondly, we have I've chained myself to a support pole in the middle of the cafeteria here. But I think this is the kind of thing that you people in the media encourage.
I didn't encourage. Sorry, this is wrong. It sounds to me like there's a bunch of kids at the school that are having some fun with you. You're on a hunger strike, so they're cooking fajitas, right?
And you think that's funny? Do you think that a million dead Iraqi children is funny, too?
Sir, two different subjects. I want to get back to Cindy. I promised her. She's hung on. Thank you, Cindy. You're on with Dr. Jim Sadler again.
Yes, Mr. Sadler, back to our conversation. Okay, you've changed yourself to a pole. You know, you're sitting here saying nobody cares about you. Okay, I don't think the president asked you to starve yourself. Terrorists aren't going to care if you live or you die. And you're trying to stop a war that basically needs to be started and finished by us. I mean, the terrorists just got done killing 3,000 women, men, and children, sir. I mean, wonder if your child or your wife or your mother was in that building.
I appreciate
what you just.
I know,
you
ma'am.
Just
I'd
want
like
them
to respond. I appreciate what you're saying. I did ask you if you needed a number for your local news affiliate, and I could...
Would you please respond to what the lady's saying, and we'll get numbers for you to the news affiliates?
All right. I'd like to ask the lady if she thinks this is fair. My wife and a number of her friends, we live in a community in the foothills around Los Angeles, flew to Baghdad 2 weeks ago to be part of the Human Shields. I saw this group of people on television sitting in the square in Baghdad playing bongo drums and playing the flute and dancing to the sound of a bongo drum. My wife got news coverage, and yet I'm chained to a pole in a university in America. I got kids cooking fajitas behind me to torture me, and no one cares. What? I don't.
Dr. Sandler, I don't think it's the kids
are
cooking.
What's going on?
Okay, I don't think the kids are cooking to torture you, okay?
They do
really
it every
don't.
Night. They come
and
in
it's
here.
It's the student union, sir. That's where people cook and eat.
Sir, you're in a cafeteria. They're going to cook. Okay, there's classes from morning to night.
Right.
Second of all, your wife, okay? If you care so much, and if you're not being greedy... Well, you should want to live and survive to take care of your wife.
Oh, wait
right
a minute.
Now, so far, all I've heard is you. It's all about you. Well, it's not you. It's we the people.
Let me finish, please.
What kind of influence are you setting for our college students? I mean, we have men over there. They are willing to die.
I'm dying
to protect
for America.
You.
I'm dying for America right now. And the kids come in, and they get cheeseburgers, and everything. And
if you're on a hunger strike, sir, I respect
Not
you
them.
For that. But you're in the middle of a cafeteria where people eat.
I am in the middle of the student union.
Which is also part of an area where the kids in the school eat.
And neither one of you... Oh, okay. So my wife gets to go to Baghdad and get blown up by an American bomb, but I've got to live.
Oh, sir!
You know, you
sir.
Don't make no sense.
Yes, I do. For one, what does your wife do? Is she a reporter?
No, my wife, she is... Right currently now, she's researching a romance novel that she's writing.
Okay, but is she a reporter?
She's a writer. She writes fiction. She writes romance fiction.
Okay, sir, anybody that goes over there where it's not their job, okay, they know the risk. If they go over there, then they know the risk.
But
okay, you're starving. You're one person doing this.
Okay,
now,
but think
by
about,
you starving, wait a minute,
think
by
about
you starving...
This. She hooked up with a couple of her girlfriends in Baghdad. I could care less about her. I don't have anybody here for me.
Okay, see, there again, we're back on you. Everything's about you.
But I'm dying.
Our nation is trying to protect our families. They are willing to die and leave their families behind so you can live a normal, healthy life.
Okay, I agree with you, but what about this? When those guys go over to Iraq and get shot, they're dying with a full stomach. I'm
going to
be
they
hungry
are going
when I die.
For, they're going for a purpose. They're going to protect us. They're not going over there to get
right.
fame
Very
and
good.
Fortune.
Very good, Cindy. I thank you for your call, and I think that the lady's points, they're dying for somebody more than themselves.
Who am I? Oh, so in other words, I'm dying against the war for Iraq, and that's only for me? You know, I would like it if people would try to hear my side, but nobody wants to hear it.
All right, I want to go over here to Jacob. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler, who's on a hunger strike to oppose the war in Iraq. Go ahead, Jacob.
All right, I'm Specialist Jacob Huckleby from
yes,
the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment, located at Fort Carson. Me and as well as 300,000 troops strong are leaving out to go to the Middle East if they aren't already there. I feel that you are greedy and selfish, Mr. Sadler. Your blood will not be on nobody's hands. I go over there and I'm going
to
risk my life with 300,000 strong to protect our country. Support is what the American people should be doing.
But you'll have something to eat.
That's because I'm smart.
Sir, could you watch your language? I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm sorry about that,
Phil. That's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine.
See, you're polite to him and I haven't had anything to eat.
Will you let them in?
Go to the vending machine and grab something. It's that easy. There is no reason why you should starve yourself to protest the war. Get a sign and hold it up or something.
Right. Let me ask you something, Dr. Sadler. Are you against the war?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, so you're against this war to save lives?
But when Gandhi...
I know about Gandhi. Are you against the war to save lives?
Yes, but what I'm trying to say is Gandhi got news coverage. Could I ask the gentleman from Colorado if you don't call, would you call your local affiliate?
I wouldn't call nobody, sir. I can't call anybody.
Well,
that is not my job. Here,
you know,
here.
I'm really hungry.
Well, then eat. There should be no reason why you should starve yourself to protest any demonstrations or the war or anything.
Right. I mean, you guys, I got to tell you this, Dr. Sadler. You guys that are against the war have no real reason for being against the war. You're just against the war because you saw somebody do it in the 60s. It looked like fun.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about. Look, you should eat.
I'm not going to.
Hey, let me tell you something, and Jacob, maybe you can. You know what I'm going to do tonight?
I'm sorry.
You know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to go home, and my wife has got these thick sirloin steaks, and I'm going to throw them on the barbecue, put a little pepper and salt on them, grill them about 8 minutes aside.
You know something? You're a really horrible, horrible man. You really are.
Grill them about 8 minutes aside, and I like to get that baked potato going. What about you, Jacob? You like that?
Yes, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah.
I might go home and do the same thing.
You know, a little sour cream and a chives, you throw that in there, and then you're really living.
Okay, both of you could go straight to hell.
Oh.
Oh, so he hung up.
What about that?
All right, very good, Sergeant. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I feel I go out there as long as however many people Army's got in. I know 300,000 strong are going over to the Middle East, and I'm out there every day dying for my country. I would give my life for our country. That's what we do. We sign our life away to the country.
Well, we appreciate it, and if there's any way we can get that piece of garbage out of there without you guys having to go into full battle mode, maybe we can do that. But whatever it takes, that's what we got to do. Have you ever read Citizen Soldiers by Stephen Ambrose?
Stephen Ambrose?
Yeah. You should pick this book up. It's about the grunts in World War II. And it'll inspire the hell out of you. Thank you for your calls. What do you want, sir?
And another thing, I'm really hungry, and what you did was bad.
Oh, I'm glad it was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
You know the show, Are You Hot? And people come and three judges rate them. One of them is Lorenzo Lamas, and another, I forget who the other guy was. Who's the girl? Rachel Hunter, and then there's another guy, some fat guy. I don't know who it is. And, you know, why should I believe them? I mean, you see what I'm saying? Okay, let's turn around and look. What if one of them was just stark, raving, roaring gay? Oh, yeah. In other words, maybe some fat girl gets up there. I like what she has. I really do. What are you talking about? Well, I love all the extra flab, the way the thighs rub together when she walks. That big, big, huge ass. She has it all, Bill, and she's got it in spades. She gets a 10. All right. Wait a minute. Who says you're the guy? Because they hired me. I'm the guy. So, God, I'd love to get that gig. I would love to get that gig. And I don't want to mess with anybody, but I guess I'd wind up doing it, you know. You know, there's some really, really gorgeous woman. Who told you to walk out of your house this morning? Who told you that you had a right to walk with humans? Get out. You know, and then along comes some fat heifer. Okay, just turn around for me. Uh-huh. Well, that's very nice. And she's maybe got a little, you know, some skin problem, acne, you know. She's got like a large pus-filled pimple on her cheek and like a mole, unsightly mole on her nose. And just, great, great. Where do you live? What do you do?
You know, right now I'm working at a hospital.
Jesus, you are really wonderful. Bob, I've got to give Carrie here a 10. She's got all the things that I look for. Skin problem, bad breath, and body odor. Let's hear it for Carrie. She is moving on to the next round. All right. Meet me in my dressing room, okay, hon? Because I just want to discuss some things. You know what would also be cool? I'll tell you right now, and this offer stands. The Phil Hendry Show will pay $1,000. I'll pay $1,000. If you could prove on videotape that you went to an Are You Hot audition and you were in a wheelchair. Now, you have to be, you have to be validly handicapped. There can't be any phony baloney, get a wheelchair and go there. B, you have to have actually been at an Are You Hot audition. And if you got kicked out because of your handicap, and you can prove you got kicked out because of your handicap, that's a $500 bonus. Okay, now I think that's pretty generous. Do you think I had to jack the money up? I think it's all I can afford. I'm not, you know, the company's not paying for this one. This one's coming right out of my pocket. You may have the ACLU on your side, and let me tell you what, I'll be there cheering along. Am I mean? Do I want to see Are You Hot off the air? No, I don't. I can't help it. I want to make people's lives miserable. It's something that happens to me. I like to screw with people. It's not that I want to make their lives miserable, but what's wrong with making, you know, alphabet soup over there? What's wrong with making Michael Eisner miserable? Nothing. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing bad about that. So, here it is. I will pay you $1,000 if you are handicapped in a wheelchair and you go to an Are You Hot audition, and you can prove that you were at an Are You Hot audition, okay? If you're missing a major limb, that's a $500 bonus. And if you can prove that you were thrown off of Are You Hot because you are handicapped, that's an additional $500. Now, that's a $2,000 payday. All right. Now, where are the Are You Hot audition sites? Thank you very much, Janice. Well, they're here. How to enter. A sponsor is looking for America's sexiest people based upon overall sex appeal and looks. Blah, 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 blah. If you're mailing in your entry, please send this completed application. There's an application. Should they just go to the website? Go to the website. There is an application. And then what happens? Do they tell you to come on in? Are you supposed to... Here it is. Check this out. Have you ever been treated for any serious physical or mental illness? If yes, please describe. Yeah, I had my leg blown off by a landmine in World War II, clearing out the Hürtgen Forest of Nazis. Oh, well, I'm so sorry. We can't have you in our yacht. Have you ever issued or been issued a restraining order? Were you always hot? That's a cool question. Do you think you're hot and why? Get a load of this question. Do your farts smell? Okay, isn't that interesting? Are your farts hot? And it says, if your farts have no discernible odor, you automatically qualify on Are You Hot? There was one chick that qualified last year, and it was like she was just farting air. It's just like an air vent. Just woo, just a fresh, fresh wintergreen scent. She's farting Glade. She was farting citrus magic, man. I mean, she was hot.
Excuse me.
That's all right, baby. You know, it always smells like a minty green forest in here. Yeah, it smells like an open meadow, honey. Have you ever appeared on television? If so, what is the highest level of education you completed? What's that got to do with it? What's the highest level of education? Everybody knows the good-looking people are stupid. Ha, 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 ha. Are you able to leave your city? Well, anyway, there's nothing in here about... Oh, check it out. Have you ever had cosmetic surgery? Yes, I was hit with a flamethrower while clearing out Suribachi in World War II. My face has been scarred beyond recognition. Thank you. You qualify on Are You Hot? All right, 1-800-449-8686. We'll repeat the order, the offer, momentarily. You're listening to The Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. And now, here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
I should tell you that this week we're broadcasting from a place called CBS Radford. It's a studio. It's a series of studios and sound stages in Studio City, California. And we're actually doing a remote broadcast from this studio complex this week because this is the week that we're shooting a pilot for NBC based upon some characters and some material that I've written along with another writer. And we have been rehearsing this week over here, and the rehearsal goes so late that I can't get in the car and drive over to Sherman Oaks, so we're staying here and broadcasting from here, and we will throughout the remainder of this week. And just wanted you to know that. You know, right across the way is where I've been working with people like Laurie Metcalf and French Stewart and some other great people. We are covering the war in Iraq. As you know, we've been kind of easing back in a little bit to the comedy that we ordinarily do, but... I don't imagine we'll be doing full bore 3 hours worth of the usual comedy show that we do until I guess this war looks like it's safely in hand and we don't have too many more body bags coming home. U.S. forces have rescued a POW in Iraq. This is the first such rescue of this war. a woman by the name of, and they didn't release this name officially, but this is a source telling NBC News, PFC Jessica Lynch. She is 19 years of age. She was a member of an army unit that was ambushed on March 23rd near An Nasiriya. And the news goes on to say that she was one of eight soldiers who vanished after their convoy was attacked. Army General Vincent Brooks read a brief statement saying that a prisoner had been rescued, but he didn't provide any details. However, the sources who spoke with news sources on condition of anonymity said that Lynch, who is from Palestine, West Virginia, was rescued overnight near An Nasiriya. The sources said she was not harmed by her captors or during the rescue. The Pentagon had listed seven prisoners of war through Tuesday, but Lynch was not among them. She and seven other members of the Army's 507th Ordnance Maintenance Company were listed as missing in action after Iraqi soldiers managed to separate their vehicles from the rest of a maintenance convoy near An Nasiriya in southern Iraq on March 23rd. There's been reports that a hospital that the Marines have overrun contained some things that might look like torture devices. They found a battery that was laying next to a bed, and there were fears for the safety of the prisoners and the missing soldiers on Friday. They also found the shredded remains of at least one U.S. military uniform belonging to a female. This hospital, by the way, was taken by the 2nd Battalion after a fierce battle with the Iraqi forces there. This fierce battle thing, I'm hearing fierce battle here and fierce battle there. The only thing I think has been done poorly has been the assumption, and I don't know that the Army or the Marines or the Navy or the Air Force ever said this is going to be an easy war. I think it was an assumption made by the media that this was going to be another Gulf War. And then when they hear that there's fierce resistance, quote unquote, they're shocked. They're stunned, as if guys armed with rifles and wearing helmets and owning tanks aren't going to fire back. As if we've entered a new age. It's a new age, and the age is this. American firepower is so overwhelming that people just put their, okay, I'm done. They put their hands up and they walk out, and it's not even war. They surrender. We're going to war. Okay. And now we're at war, and about 5,000 guys come out with their hands up. You must be confusing Iraq with France. Ha, 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 ha. Anyway, that's the only assumption that has been made. It's been made by the people reporting this. And I'm a member of the broadcast media, but I got to tell you, I said it last night, I'm going to say it again. The media has completely failed in reporting this war. An absolute abject failure in just about every regard. Their reporting, as I said last night, was panicky, hysterical, over the top. Sometimes they underreport. Sometimes they're reporting things that will only jeopardize people's lives. I don't understand the purpose of any reporter reporting on troop movement, position, and the time of an attack. Well, what is that going to do? Is that going to better inform me? Great. You mean, in other words, tomorrow morning at 5 a.m., 6,000 Marines are going to die because you opened your big mouth. Be sure to tune in. The other thing that's happening, and you probably noticed this, is especially on Fox television, which is, I get my TV news from Fox and CNN, the battle for Baghdad. The battle for Baghdad, when the big battle gets underway, when the big war starts. It's like the Super Bowl. And there's a anticipation for this to start. There's just been an utter and complete lack of reality in the reporting. Shock and awe. Now that, we were led to believe, was going to be something unseen before in the annals of humankind on this planet. It would have been bigger than King Kong, bigger than Godzilla. It would have been like, forget about flying saucers versus Earth. This is shock and awe, man. This is going to be... forget it. I mean, you look up in the sky and it's black with helicopters. I think I heard something like that. I ain't seen nothing like that. I mean, not that I've... Obviously, I'm not there in the theater of operations, so the bombs dropping on Baghdad have got to be some kind of a very scary thing for the people that live there. There's no doubt about that. But shock and awe, I mean, was that it? You're dropping bombs. So stop it with all of the... See, Pentagon, you guys push it when you give these things soundbite-worthy names, shock and awe. Why don't you guys publish a program, as long as you're on the subject, a program with the names of every soldier in the Iraqi Army and every soldier in the U.S. Marines, brought to you by Coca-Cola. Just fight the war and stop trying to appease these nincompoops that you got to sit there and talk to every day and answer their stupid questions. They'll learn. They're journalists. They got to learn their job. Sooner or later, they'll learn it. They'll learn it one way or they'll learn it another. You guys in the Pentagon, it's your job to teach them how to be reporters. We've got some other news and some of it disturbing. We also want to get to our top secret file here. But first, U.S. Marines moved into the southern Iraqi town of Shatra today to recover the body of a dead comrade, which had been hanged in the town square, according to officers. Hundreds of troops were dispatched on the operation with intelligence reports indicating the body of a dead American who was killed in a firefight last week had been paraded through the streets and hanged in public. We should like to retrieve the body of the Marine, but it is not our sole purpose, said Lieutenant Colonel Pete Owen of the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force. Military sources said another part of the operation was to arm local militias to fight against members of the ruling Ba'ath Party, loyal to Iraqi President Saddam Hussein. So a dead American Marine is hoisted up and hung from something, some kind of a structure in a town in Iraq. And that's when they're not dragging them through the streets or, as they did in Iran back in 1980, taking the body parts and throwing them up in the air. White House spokespeople, we don't know if Saddam Hussein is alive or dead. Boy, there's a news flash, even though it's interesting that he didn't show up for a Build TV appearance Tuesday night. Some of you may not know this, but Saddam was supposedly scheduled for a television appearance in Iraq on Tuesday night, and he didn't show up. An announcement that Iraq President Saddam Hussein would address his nation raised the possibility he would make an appearance and prove that he survived early coalition strikes. Instead, another Iraqi official read a statement to be from Saddam. And the statement goes as follows. This was, by the way, read by Minister Mohammed Saeed al-Shahaf. This is the guy who's, he looks like a tough dude. Have you seen the guy with the berets? I will show them what I mean by this insolent, the invasion of Baghdad, these bastards. He's a big, ugly bastard. Anyway, here's the message. God is great, God is great, God is great. There is no God but Allah. A great warrior nation, O sons of our glorious nation, O men of arms who uphold the honor of resistance, God's peace be upon you as you face the aggressors, the enemies of God and humanity, the passing infidels with chests filled with faith and love for God. Yes, these are the most honorable days. For more than 700 years, God has granted us this great opportunity and calamity through which God meant to test our faith, to which He, the Omnipotent Almighty, was a witness. God has granted us this opportunity to match our words with deeds so that He can bless us with His mercy. Yes, O brothers, for ages and ages, religious scholars could not reach such a consensus as they have reached today, that this aggression against the fortress of faith is an aggression on religion, wealth, honor, life, women, children, the elderly, little tiny babies, cartoons, everything soft and innocent and everything, you know, get out of here. You might as well just say this. The Americans are here to take infants out of incubators and barbecue them. Why don't you just say that? It'd be more believable. Yes, oh brothers, I am Saddam Hussein. The Americans and the British and the Israelis, the Jews, the Zionist entity, are here to cut children out of the wombs of their mothers and have them for a shrimp cocktail. I mean, well, you know. Then, of course, they come back with this. We are, let's go do jihad, is what al-Shahaf said. He said, whoever dies will be rewarded by heaven. Let's go and do jihad. The battle for Baghdad appears imminent, U.S. Central Command leader General Tommy Frank said. So yesterday you heard this guy, Tariq Aziz, say that anything and everything is acceptable when one is fighting aggression. So he came out and basically admitted that they've used women, that they've used children. You notice that these women that went through the checkpoint and got gunned down yesterday and the children, what did you notice about that in terms of the response from the American media and the American people? Nobody's buying it. The only place they're buying it is down on the so-called Arab street. Everybody else, the rest of the world, is not buying that that was anything other than a cold-blooded murder committed by those women and their own suicide. So now what's happened is there is a definite line that's been drawn in the sand between the U.S. and Britain and totalitarian theocracy. And Saddam, this cat trying to identify with religion, This is a whole, this is, must be, every now and again he rolls this one out. See, the guy is either wearing a military beret or he's got a bed sheet on and he looks like he's about to go up into the wilderness and read the Quran. You know, he's got a different face for everybody. And today he is the, he's a mullah. He's the head of the Iraqi branch of Islam. Okay, our number is 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show. We're talking all things war in Iraq for the next couple of hours. And I find, as this war goes on, more and more that all of the illusions that people had about this war are falling. All of them are beginning to crumble. We now have reports. We've got computer disks that Ansar al-Islam, which is a group in northern Iraq, is tied in with al-Qaeda. This was the big so-called linkage that everybody was looking for. They found the chemical suits. Now, there is an article in USA Today that said, still no proof of Iraq's illicit weapons. Troops do find protective gear. So they're saying there's no proof, but I would like to address that. And I'll tell you why it doesn't make any difference whether they find proof of weapons of mass destruction or not. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686.
And now more on the Phil Hendry Show.
Despite discoveries of chemical protection suits and decontamination equipment that suggests Iraqi forces planned chemical or biological attacks, U.S.-led forces still have not found evidence of such weapons in the 13-day-old war. And this from USA Today. This is what I just read. And you know what I say to that? I say, so what? So what if we don't? If we don't, we don't. You can tell me we're doing a bad thing right now, going in and taking this guy out? You know, he's shooting his own people now. What does that tell you? The guy's got the body of a dead American hanging from a lamppost someplace. He's got that stupid-looking mustache. I just don't like him. What do you think of that? That's why we went in to take him out, because we just don't like him. No weapons of mass destruction? Too bad. The guy's been getting in our way. He's been a burr in our side for a long time, and after 9/11, that was it. That was the end. That was the end, you know? 9/11, we'd put up with anything before that. With 9/11, we ain't putting up with nothing yet. I think that this war, if nothing else, has done something that they can pump their fist in the air and talk about jihad all they want. I mean, they can roll through the streets of every Arabian capital and talk about death to America and the Zionist entity all they want. But the fact is, this war has done one thing better than anything else. It has sent a very clear message, try it again, and, well, one more tin horn's going to fall. Go ahead, try it again. Try a little more of that terrorism stuff. Watch what happens. Because those cats on the 11th, like we were saying last night, what did they get? They got Taliban gone. They got Saddam. Now he's hiding in his bunker. Yeah, they really made things a lot easier for the suffering people of the Middle East against the Zionist entity. Yeah, sure. Let's go over here now to Jamie. Hello, Jamie. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I have a question for you. What do you think is going to be the outcome of the Canadians not supporting us on this issue with the war? I mean, they seem to have turned their backs on us after so many years of us covering them in the umbrella of North American protection. Not even a symptom of trying to help us. Not even what do you think is going to be the outcome after the war for them?
I'm looking at my producer, Janice Anguero, who's from Vancouver, and she's got a smile on her face. And I believe this, Jamie, seriously. I don't think there'll be any fallout. I think Canada is a friend. I think sometimes Canadians start acting like Europeans. That's what I don't get about Canadians. Sometimes they start acting like Europeans and they get resentful of us throwing our money around or doing this or doing that. And we have more in common with Canada than Canada has with Britain or France. And I don't get it with some Canadians. And I know you're down in Miami, right?
Yeah, I'm in Miami.
So you're running around with a lot of Canadians down there?
Sure. I mean, these people are our friends. I mean, every day, Americans treat Canadians like they're our best friends. When a Canadian comes around, there's you know, it's all smiles. And that, and yet, and, you know, you read the newspapers, you catch the highest level officials in their government are defaming us and calling us bastards.
Yeah,
and
right.
You know, what is this all about?
Yeah, that's a disgrace. And we let them come down here in their Birkenstocks and their white socks and their Speedos, and just, we got to put up with that every winter. No, I think that, I think nothing. I think that they're a friend. I think they need to be slapped into, I think somebody's got to say to them, what is it with you? What, are you nuts? Yeah, go ahead. Hang out with the British and the French. You're North Americans. You got more in common with us than you do with them. I mean, we're not asking you to be America. You're Canadians. You have unique things that's yours and all that crap, and 30% of the music you have to play has got to be Anne Murray. That's good. We understand that. But why would you, you know, why would you think for a minute that you don't understand what we're doing? See, that's the thing. That's what disappoints me about Canadians. They pretend like they don't get it.
Right.
Well, why are you going after these? Oh, come on. You know. You
right,
know as
exactly.
well as I do. You know what I'm saying? So I believe that the Canadians are not going to be punished. I mean, what are we going to punish them with? What, are we going to take them into the back room and spank them with a spoon? I think they're our friends, and I think that the end of this war is going to show that the United States was willing to do something that was smart, that was righteous, that was right, that was seriously going to make this world a way better place. And maybe they'll get that crap can. What's his name, Prime Minister Crap Can?
Kretchen.
Oh, Kretchen, I'm sorry. I thought it read Crap Can. What's his first name? Jean-Paul Crapcan? Maybe they'll finally get him out of there, get some guy with his brains about him in there, and, you know, maybe develop their military a little bit. Every time I hear about Canada, their military is in bad shape. I mean, you know, get something going whereby I think you can stand as your own country and not having to follow along in the European footsteps, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make. Thank you very much for your call, sir. 1-800-449-8686. I don't care if we don't find any weapons of mass destruction. I think what we're doing is a war against terrorism. We're prosecuting it successfully. Saddam Hussein is a terrorist. He has supported terrorism. He's sponsored terrorism. And the fact of the matter is, look, it wasn't so much that the guy had weapons of mass destruction that he wouldn't let anybody go in and inspect whether he did or not. I mean, if he didn't, just let the inspectors go in and do it. What was all this foot dragging that was going on? What was all of this 12 years that was going on? Throwing the inspectors out, throwing the inspectors in. If you ain't got it, you ain't got to let them go where they got to go and let them see what they got to see. This guy brought this hell down upon himself. He's only got himself to blame down there in the bunker. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
I got this letter, and now I got to ask you something, Janice. This, is this a real letter, or is this just a fake letter that somebody sent? It says Tom, Dick, and Harry.
That's not their real name, so
I wonder if it was a real letter that was sent to frontpagemagazine.com. It's very amusing. We went to Iraq a couple of months ago to be human shields. We're against the imperialist, immoral, and dangerous war, and we thought we'd be able to stop it. When we got off the plane, we were treated extremely cordially, but before we'd even had a chance to change our socks, we were taken to the places they wanted us to protect. That was our first shock. Instead of putting us in hospitals or schools, they put us in this smelly, smoky, noisy, totally disgusting, polluted place that no one but a capitalist could love. I think it may have been a factory, but I'm not sure because I've never seen one. What could they have been thinking? We went there to save people, not factories, but they seem to care more about their stuff than their people. I don't understand this, because if we care about their people, why don't they care about them? And then the next shock. We figured that if Bush didn't care about the Iraqi people, he'd care about us, but we were wrong. He didn't seem to care about that we were there. He bombed away anyway. It's terrible. We care about everybody, but nobody cares about us. At least by the time we get back, New York will be smoke-free. War is so horrible, there has to be a way to have one without all this killing. But we don't expect you to be able to figure out how to do that. We just want to know, what should we tell our friends when we get home? We know we're heroes, but we want them to know, too, and if we don't handle it right, they won't know, and they won't care about us, either. Can you help? That's perfect. That's perfect. The Independent is some whack job newspaper in Britain, but they are reporting that an American missile identified from the remains of its serial number was pinpointed yesterday as the cause of that explosion at a Baghdad market on Friday night that killed 62 Iraqis. Now, the codes on the foot-long shrapnel shard seen by the Independent correspondent at the scene of the bombing, which was in the Shaul district, came from a weapon manufactured in Texas by Raytheon. So the article goes on to say that it has been identified. It was a Raytheon-produced missile. It was an American missile. It wasn't an Iraqi missile. The Americans killed 62 people. But, you know, if anybody cares to hear this, we didn't do it on purpose, you know? I mean, it was like a mistake, as opposed to gunning down your own people as they're running out of a city. I still can't get that image out of my head of the people of Basra running, being hit with volleys of rifle fire, and the British Marines running the other way, trying to protect them, shooting back at the Iraqis. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show here. We're covering the war in Iraq, and it's a special coverage for the next several days, if not weeks. We are easing back into our normal format, but we're still going to be covering all of the things coming out of the war. Until such time as we figure that we can return to normal programming, I guess. Here's Eric on the Phil Henry Show. Hello, Eric.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Phil, I'm calling from Toronto, Canada. And, you know, I'm just responding. I listened to a previous caller talking about American reaction to the Canadian stand. And I just want to let you know, I wish 300 Americans were listening, because there's a huge groundswell of support for the Americans, and I guess I can only give an example yesterday of the our baseball team home opener, where 50,000 fans actively cheered God Bless America in the seventh inning. I think a lot of people here are extremely disgusted and embarrassed by our government's stand. We are waiting for this guy to leave power, and I don't know,
yeah.
Bill, that's in a nutshell.
Now, you know what, I hear that, man. I do, and I've heard from other people in Canada, and I don't think that Canadians are supposed to do what Americans tell them to do. I've heard that comment. Nobody's trying to, at least I would never want my government to try to tell. It just seems to me that culturally we share so much, and that we are kind of residing on the same block, if you will. You know, we got the...
Well, Phil, can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
I think our government, I think Canada had a very interesting middle ground. I think that we should have vociferously supported the Americans, the pursuit of democracy, the goals of the American people. We didn't have to take an absolute combat war because of the United Nations stand, but there should have been an active support in whatever form, and I'm just...
Well, actually, it's happened. It's actually happened to some degree. Canada's kicked in $100 million toward humanitarian relief. And
well,
I don't
we also have soldiers in Afghanistan and backup role. Our defense minister has lied and doesn't know what he's talking about. He's talking about we're not participating, but our troops are there and there's exchange officers. I have to tell you, our government is so disorganized and really not representative of the thoughts of most people that I know. And, you know, Phil, my politics aside, war or no war, it's a support of democracy, freedom, and an unbelievable relationship.
Absolutely,
you know,
I guess maybe what ought to happen in Canada is maybe you guys ought to cut your losses. I mean, get rid of Quebec and just, you know,
well,
what I'm saying,
because
it just seems like...
You want to know something, Phil? With all due respect, they're waiting for him to go as much as the rest of the country.
Well, that's cool.
And
we're waiting
for our next prime minister, who I know the Americans will see one heck of a change and just resume a relationship of cousins, brothers, whatever you want to call it.
Well, you know what it was more than anything else, and I thank you very much for your call. I guess more than anything else is we were getting all this heat from all over the world, and then it kind of got surprisingly came from Canada as well. So I guess sometimes Americans take that relationship for granted. I know I do. And I remember, like, I grew up with two Canadian parents, and they came to the United States. Remember that guy that called the other night, by the way? You come from Canada! So, well, I was born here, but I'd be proud if I came from Canada. Well, my folks came from Canada with my older brother and older sister, And they settled in California, and then I was born here along with my younger sister. But I would talk to them about, well, tell me about Canada. Well, it was cold, you know, basically the message was, oh, you know, it's cold, and we played ice hockey, and we went rowing on the lake in the summer, and, went horseback riding. I said, well, it sounds like America. I said, well, I mean, it's pretty much the same deal up there, except we had a different three downs in football instead of four and all that crap, you know, whatever. I mean, it is cold. It's like America, only colder. And it ain't like America. It's a different country. But like I said to the guy, we share so much culturally, and we're like defending the same piece of real estate, you know. I mean, there is something to be said for kind of, what's the old saying, you know, you back your brother's play a little bit here. You know, if we're messing up, maybe you guys can say it privately behind our back. Like,
you guys are really screwing me. I mean, we're going to go with you to the wall, but do you mind terribly if you get a bath every now and again?
That's Canada's role, I think, you know.
You know, it's day five of this war. Would a shower kill you?
All right, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. Now, I want to read from our file very quickly. Some news you may have, some news you may not. White House spokesman, we don't know if Saddam is alive or dead, even though it's interesting he didn't show up for his Build TV appearance Tuesday night. We gave you that. Iraqi Information Minister al-Sahaf read out his message calling for jihad to fight Americans everywhere. Baghdad has denied rumors that members of Saddam's family have left the country. I don't think he's left the country. I think Saddam's taken a page out of the Osama bin Laden manual for survival, and that's just keep your big fat mouth shut and stay low. Colin Powell has arrived in Ankara amid friction over Turkey's withdrawal from the U.S.-led war coalition against Iraq. U.S. Patriots shoot down Iraqi surface missiles fired south of Baghdad. From the Pentagon, Iraqi commando forces are still present in parts of western Iraq, offering a potential for ground missile launch. And what that means is Israel. And on Sunday, Israeli defense minister said the state of war readiness remains the same in Israel. So what's going on right now is there is an illusion created by Saddam Hussein that he is much, much more dangerous than he is. And it's being fed by an American media with this stiff resistance stuff. I got something stiff. What do you mean stiff resistance? They're fighting back. Stiff resistance? Oh, God. Well, you know, guy's going to fight. Guy's got a gun. He's going to shoot. What do you mean stiff resistance? You mean we got to go in and kick ass? Yeah, I guess that's what we got to do. We got tanks, we got weapons, we got missiles, we got jets. They're all supposed to do something. Otherwise, it's a big fat waste of money. If those guys came out with their hands up, we could have gone in there with three pea shooters, maybe a slingshot. What? And with those plastic bicycle helmets. The cats wouldn't have done, you know, if they're going to give themselves up, we could equip our guys all in plastic bicycle helmets, riding shorts, pea shooters, slingshots, a BB gun. You know, it's just like 85 million pellet guns. And the Iraqis are all coming out with a... But they don't do that. That's why we send these guys in. We got the 101st south of Baghdad right now. We got the Marines moving. And God bless those guys. And I hate like hell to see the pictures of these fallen men and women. But the fact remains, and this is the thing that sort of I take a little bit of comfort in. When they went into the military, especially the people over there, they knew exactly what the risk was, and they were willing to take that risk. Especially these forces, these very well-trained forces. By the way, did you hear the latest? Oh, this is good. All this stuff that was coming out of the Middle East over the weekend came from a couple of American Army officers who said, well, you know, this battle plan had to be redrawn and it doesn't look blah, 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 right? So they talked to this cat from the Pentagon. He said, well, we haven't heard any complaints from the Air Force, Marines, or Navy. Maybe it's a problem the Army's having, which basically, anybody out there, former Army, basically saying you guys are chicken. The guy basically put the slam on the Army. Because he said, you know, the Marines aren't questioning the plan. The Navy ain't. The Air Force ain't. It's coming out of the Army. Well, now I wonder what seems to be the problem. Maybe you're chicken. Which I doubt sincerely. It's an obvious challenge, a throwing down of the gauntlet to say to these guys, why don't you shut up? just do the job. Which it ain't the Army. It's some big mouth Army officer over there. All right, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show's coverage of the war in Iraq continues after this.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
More news if you haven't heard. The U.S. Marines have captured a huge Iraqi munitions depot of 40 warehouses in south-central Iraq. Street battles continue in Hindiyah to secure the Euphrates Bridge 50 miles from Baghdad a day after U.S. 101st Airborne units broke through Iraqi defense lines to that town that straddles the river. And we'll also give you a little update on Syrians and Palestinians who have just been flooding into, so they say, Iraq to join this war, this jihad, this phony baloney jihad that Saddam, somewhere in his bunker, has called for. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Javier. Hello, Javier.
Hey,
hold on. Hold on. Hold on for just a second, Javier. I want to go to Jamal. Jamal, go ahead. Jamal? He's chicken. Hey, Jamal. Yeah, he's chicken. All right. He was going to lay into me, but he doesn't want to. Javier, go ahead, man.
Hey, how are you tonight? I'm just calling in to weigh in on the self-bashing that Americans do, specifically against the office of the President of the United States. The way I see it is that the President of the United States represents us and throughout the world. It's a big PR machine, and I think it's kind of ludicrous for Americans to go out and be bashing him when he is trying to do the best that he can. He may not be perfect, but he's our president.
What do you mean by bash? You mean bash or disagree?
Well, disagree in public and basically put him down and talk about his lack of whatever. And I think that this is a time when Americans should rally behind the president and not even pick a fight with him and, you know, give him sort of like a poetic license in getting his job done. And I think that anybody who goes against that, whether it's Americans or whatever, what happens is the Canadians are going to put us down and the rest of the world is going to join us. And I think that...
People got a right to say what they want to say. But I got a right to know that they're stupid for saying it, you know? So if they want to put down Bush, I'm not going to pass a law that says they can't do it. But I want to look at their argument and say it's a stupid argument. And the best thing to do rather than rail against people like that is to expose them to their own ignorance. I mean, expose them to how ridiculous they sound. 1-800-449-8, like for instance, I'll give an example. You go out into the street, you protest the war, just put a mirror to any of those people. Just put a big mirror to any of them, and what do you see? It's a conglomerate of disenchanted yuppies, bored housewives, senior citizens that, you know, there's no babysitter jobs, and somebody out there who got religion and decided he wants to be political. And it's just a whole gamut of reasons. There's nothing really coherent about this anti-war movement at all. I mean, it's pretty much been, I believe that whatever is left of it has been pretty much exposed. Addie, hi, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hi, Phil. I'm Eddie from Toronto, and I would like to say that, you know, you're criticizing our Prime Minister, Jean Chrétien, but, you know, he's a very good person, and he's got a morals to keep out of Canada, out of this oil robbery business, you know. We think most of the Canadians, we think that, you know, you are having an immature president who takes a decision on his own, and he doesn't want to listen to United Nations, which is a world-renowned institution which directs most of the calls. You agree with me?
Well, where should I start with your comments? I mean, if you want to talk about thievery, why don't you stop with the leaders of the Middle East stealing from their own people? What are you talking about, America? Oil robbery?
No,
I mean,
no.
At least what we're doing, sir, if I could just finish this one point.
If
at least, excuse
me,
could I finish my point?
Okay.
At least what we're doing, by going into Iraq and taking out Saddam Hussein, even if we wanted the oil, at least we're doing a good thing by taking him out. The French, and maybe even the Canadians, excuse me, I haven't finished. The French and maybe even the Canadians want to put money into his pocket.
No, but this is an illegal war.
Well, you can use all the terms. Well, why don't you debate my logic? Why don't you debate my argument rather than just use labels? Why don't you debate my argument?
Tell me one thing. We don't have any right to go into any country and grab their wealth.
We do have the right when the United Nations is... Yes, we do. We have a war of self-defense we're waging in Iraq, sir. This is a terror-sponsoring state, a terror-sponsoring regime, and we have a right to take them out.
No. First of all, the president said, he got a WMD, and then they did not find it. United Nations did not find it. Then you went and said, this guy is a bad guy, and there is a regime change. How many regimes? Why you want to change the regimes? You want to put a green card holder Iraqi over there?
We're gonna take out anybody that had a hand in destroying American lives.
No,
and
sir.
We have declared
he was never being connected.
Addie, can I say something?
What happened to Osama?
Can I say something? I think it's naive to believe that the terror organizations of this world are not interconnected in some way, exchanging information, exchanging weaponry. I think it's absolutely naive. Now, he's got an organization in North Iraq called Ansar al-Islam, which has on its computer disks communications with Al-Qaeda, and this is an organization that he supports.
No, this is nothing to do with Islam or jihad or the nothing, you know. This is just...
What are you talking about? I just said.
The oil. This is the wealth and
yeah.
This is the oil.
You know what?
That's
you can't make
reason.
An argument. You can't make an argument and you can't debate my logic.
I can make an argument. This is an oil robbery. That's it.
No, that's not an argument, sir. That's an opinion.
No.
That's an opinion. It's not backed up with anything. I've been backing up what I've been saying, hopefully, here with, I think, logical conclusion. 1-800-449-8686. Thank you for your call. Thank you for your calls. We'll be right back on The Phil Hendry Show.
one 800 449 8686. And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
We have this from our sources in the Middle East, who will remain unnamed, but they are the Phil Hendry sources, and much of what we've been reporting to you guys over the last 13 days or so, we've reported 2-3 days ahead of everybody else. Now, right now, the 101st Division, I think it's the 101st Airborne is what they mean, the 101st Airborne Division, is battling for control of Hindia. Now, let me see that map, if I can just find out where that is, what part of Baghdad, or what part of Iraq. Do you see it anywhere there?
No, I'll find it.
All right. Well, it's on the outskirts of Iraq. I believe it's about 50 miles to the southwest. This is the war's potential turning point right now. Saddam Hussein must decide whether or not he can set up a second line of defense on the western outskirts of Baghdad to prevent the 101st from breaking through in two heads, one aiming for Saddam International Airport and the second for Al-Fallujah, northwest of Baghdad, to cut off the main expressway leading west out of Baghdad to the Jordanian capital of Amman. This dual movement would amount to a siege of the northern and western outskirts of the capital. The Iraqi ruler will also have to decide whether to try and halt American troops by opening the floodgates between the great rivers or to resort without further ado to his weapons of mass destruction. Now, this war is in its 13th day. I don't know how fast you want it to go, but it's pretty damn fast. 13th day. I don't care if this war took 6 months. That's faster than any freaking war to topple a fascist regime in history. In history. Longer than any war to topple a fascist regime in history, as far as I know. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Jamal. Go ahead, Jamal.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I just wanted to make comments. First of all, I want to make clear that I support our president, what's going on. We need to take this knucklehead, you know, so-called Hitler wannabe. And second of all, I wanted to remind you what our president said before we went into war, that this war is not against Islam or not against Muslims. And I would request you to please quit putting the hate toward Muslims and Islam.
Well, that's a pretty general statement. What have I said that puts hate toward Muslims and Islam?
Well, yesterday I was listening to your show, and you made the comment that we should go to Middle East and take down every single leadership. And I just want to remind you, there's more countries in the Middle East support our country in what's going on. And this is
That's not anti-Islam.
Yes, I think to me it is.
Okay? How? How?
So you wanna go ahead and kill every single leader in the Middle East?
Well, what's that got to do with me being against the religion of Islam? I'm against fascists. I'm against totalitarian dictators.
Like I said, we need to take this Hitler wannabe out. You know,
I can't think of a leader in the Middle East that's worthy of leading his people. Not a one of them.
Well, let's not say that. I can count 10 countries or more that they are supporting U.S. Okay, the allies in the Gulf War One. Okay, and they are still supporting the U.S. Okay.
I personally don't believe it, sir. If you want to talk about Saudi Arabia, I don't think that they support us. I think they actively support. Their government tolerates and in some instances supports terrorist organizations. The same goes for Iran. The same goes for Jordan.
Iran is not in Middle East. Okay?
All right, okay, fine. They're Persian. The same goes for Jordan. The same goes for Syria. Who can we trust down there? Nobody.
Okay.
Kuwait
is supporting us.
What is okay? Kuwait?
Kuwait, and even
Kuwait is a monarchy. These countries have nothing in common with us. They have governments that are odious to any free person anywhere. They are monarchies and dictatorships.
That might be true. But Phil, what we doing is spreading hate. We are satisfying our terrorists.
It's hate against Muslims, and it's not. It is not. It's not even hate so much as direct action against these fascists who have courted, supported, and sent out into the world terror organizations that have now found their way into my country and killed 3,000 of my people. It's not anti-Islam. It's anti-fascism.
Like, the other day you made a comment about the Palestinian, what Israelis are doing to them. And to you, you think it's fair what the Israelis doing to Palestinians?
I don't think it's fair what the Arab world, sir, for over 50 years has done to Israel. Try to drive it 5 million people into the ocean. 500 million Arabs trying to push 5 million people into the ocean. And they call the Israelis Nazis? Come on.
Phil, you are just being biased, okay?
I'm just being biased. I'm standing up for 5 million people against 500 million people.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, I'm so biased.
Are you Jewish?
That question is asked every single time I take the side of Israel, and the answer, Yamal, is no. I was raised Roman Catholic. But every single Arab that calls my show, or Arab American, or anybody that supports Palestine, automatically assumes I got to be a Jew.
Well, you know, because you're anti-Islamic.
Sir, you haven't yet made the case that I'm anti-Islamic. Okay. You haven't yet. You and the gentleman who called last hour said these blatant, you know, these pat statements about what I believe and weren't able to back them up.
Let me say something. You know, I think you need to study Islam more. First time,
in a statement against Islam, then I'll study it more. But you have not done that, and you're on a cordless phone. It's buzzing.
Okay, you know what? What you need? You know? Do you even know when was the first time women were given the equal right to men in Middle East?
Well, you know what? I will look that up, sir. As soon as you start studying the history of Israel and what's been done to that country, how about that? I'll study the history of Islam in the Middle East if you look into what the Israeli people have had to contend with for over 50 years in the Middle East.
Zionists divided somebody else's country and handed to Jewish, okay?
No, the United Nations, the organization you support, sir, divided that part of the world.
Okay, but how can it be fair when Palestinian open-hearted, they accepted Jewish, okay? Because
no, they didn't. They went to war.
Everywhere in the
they
world.
Went to war. They went to the minute Israel was established as a state, they were attacked.
Not by Palestinian, no.
They were attacked by... Yes, they were attacked by Palestinians.
No.
And all Arabs.
They were attacked by Egypt. Okay, Phil?
They were attacked by these... They were attacked by Jordan. And they were attacked by Palestinians.
Palestinians, poor people, never had a land. They don't even have... They
Jamal,
don't even have drugs.
I know it comes as a crushing blow, but you're going to have to read your history, sir. I can't talk to you if you don't know your history. And they were attacked from all sides by the Arab world.
But,
and
know,
and
all,
that
all
has
I'm
continued.
Saying, all I'm saying, Phil,
no, you're all you're
you
selling. You're
fair, okay?
You need to be educated.
I'm educated, okay? I've
well, I can't talk to you if you got your master's. I don't care if you have your master's.
Okay.
You must have your master's
educated,
Well, you might have your master's in asphalt pouring or something. But what
no,
we're talking
I
about right now, you don't have
a business that you will never
all right,
achieve. Bill,
well, you know what, sir? I know
I
more about history.
You don't have a high school level education.
Compared to you, I'm a doctorate of history. Compared to you,
doctorate of history.
Yeah, compared to you, I'm
a
doctorate of history.
I think you're a doctor of making up stories and spreading hate.
Well, I tell you what, you look it up and tell me if I'm not telling the truth.
Okay.
You go ahead. You read your history.
Okay.
But the problem, and I. I've come against this. I've come. You don't even know the Constitution.
All you want, Bill, is spreading hate.
You don't even know the Constitution.
Okay.
You don't even know the Constitution.
Okay?
No, you don't. You don't know the Constitution.
Hate crime is a pretty severe punishment.
That's not in the Constitution.
Somebody needs to take you off air. That's what they need to do.
I think somebody needs to take you into a school and teach you something before you come on the air and run your mouth like a lot of people who run their mouths in the show. They know absolutely nothing about the history of the Middle East. All you know, Jamal, is the propaganda you've been fed and that you've accepted and you haven't analyzed critically. And for a master's in business, I find that shocking. Thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686. I already mentioned the battle for Hindia. But this idea that Saddam Hussein might open up the floodgates of the Euphrates. Now, Hindia is 50 miles south of Baghdad, and the fight the 101st was involved in was over a bridge across the Euphrates River. And that's the news that we have as of late. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
You know, Hussein is not a stupid man. He's crazy like a fox or whatever term you want to use. He imagines himself, there was an interesting article I mentioned a week and a half ago in the Los Angeles Times about how he imagines himself to be like Joseph Stalin. And that the battle for Baghdad will not be unlike the battle for Stalingrad. If you read any history of the World War II and the Battle for Stalingrad, it was a bloody, protracted war that turned the tide against the Germans. It was a folly. It was the idiotic folly of Hitler's. First of all, Hitler was on his way to Moscow and had his panzers pointed at Moscow and was ready to take the capital of the country. But he decided to turn south and grab some of the oil fields that the Russians had. And in order to do that, he had to go through Stalingrad. And that is where Stalin decided to make the stand. Now, here's where the similarities end between Joseph Stalin and Saddam Hussein. Stalin, at that time, was garnering support militarily from both the United States and Great Britain, including aircraft. Also, Stalin had 1.25 million men at his disposal in his army. He had a far more mechanized army than Saddam Hussein has, and he was battling an enemy, the Germans, who had a supply line, and this is why they talk about supply lines being important, that was very, very long, heading back to Germany. I mean, I don't know how many hundreds, if not thousands of kilometers, probably a thousand. So he had this incredibly long supply line. The Russians were able to hold out through the winter because the Germans tried to siege the country. They tried to besiege the country for a while. Now it became winter. And now the Russians have got the Germans on their terms. They've got a very cold winter. You've got cold and tired German soldiers who, by the way, were coming from an army split into two fronts. They were fighting on both the Western Front as well as the Eastern Front. So you had guys, you know, you had soldiers that were being literally shipped in from the West. And now they were, you know, involved in this counterattack that Stalin began. He broke out of the city. He was able to attack a very depleted German flank. He had fresh equipment. He had fresh troops. And he had a very, very motivated army in driving the Nazis out of Russia. You have to understand something, that Russia had been betrayed in their mind by Hitler because they'd signed a non-aggression pact with him in 1940, and he turned around, or 1939, and he turned around and he attacked them. So they were a little bit pissed. So Stalin was able to marshal patriotism. He was able to marshal the patriotic instincts of his people, and forget about whether he was a communist and that he had murdered many millions of them and that he had been responsible for a totalitarian regime, the likes of which the world hadn't seen until Hitler came along. Forget about all of that. They were fighting for Mother Russia. Now, what's the difference between that and what Saddam Hussein has right now? First of all, Hussein has nowhere near the army. He has nowhere near the military force. Additionally, Hussein does not seem to have a similar kind of relationship with his people. While we are meeting resistance, we are not meeting any kind of resistance that's anywhere similar to what occurred in Russia. The people of Iraq don't seem to have any great love for Saddam Hussein. And they don't particularly seem to have any great love for their country to the point where they want the Americans to stay out. They seem to, in part, welcome the Americans. Not 100%, but in part, they welcome the Americans. And the biggest thing that makes this different from the siege of Stalingrad is that Saddam has absolutely no military help coming from anybody else. Yes, I know the Russians have apparently sold some equipment, and he might have 4,000 guys driving rented vans with, you know, pellet guns who are going to be martyrs. This is different from having the support of an industrial power like the United States. And you know what? The true Iraqi patriot seems to be reacting the opposite way. They seem to be where they can, supporting Americans. People say, well, they're not dancing in the street as the Americans come into town. Well, I don't necessarily see them, you know, hating Americans. I don't see them hiding from them. As a matter of fact, the people of Basra ran toward the British for safety. You've seen the pictures of the British standing there with their rifles as the people of Basra are crouching beneath them for protection. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Let me go over to Muaz. Okay, are you on the air, sir? You're whispering to somebody.
Hello?
Yeah, who are we talking to?
Okay, my name is Muaz Mustafa. I'm from Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I'm really proud to be American. You know, I think it's great that whenever anybody comes, attacks our country or comes anywhere near our land, you know, we go right after them, no matter what anyone else says, and we just get them right back. And I was just saying, at the same time, my origins is I'm originally Palestinian, and I believe that the Palestinians are doing the same thing. I think they're going to defend their country, their lands. You know, they're not trying to be terrorists. They're not trying to be anybody, you know, who's taking over someone else's home. But they're trying to regain their homes. They're trying to, you know, just take back what was taken away from them, just like when somebody attacks our country. I mean, we're passionate about it, and we go out and we get them, no matter what anyone else says or what the critics say.
Well, it's a good argument, and it's an understandable one. The problem with Palestine is that after Israel successfully defended itself in 1948, the Palestinians, who had rejected that partition from the United Nations, now went back to the UN and said now they wanted to accept it.
No. What happened? Okay, which part? Sorry. Can you feed that real fast?
I said the original partition was rejected by the Palestinians.
And when was 1948?
The original partition of the United Nations, the original partition plan of the United Nations was rejected by the Palestinians.
As far as
correct.
I know, the British mandate, which what happened whenever in 1948, when Palestine was under a British mandate, written promised the Palestinians and the Israelis both to have both to have the
right,
land back.
Right. And so a partition plan came out of the UN that was rejected by the Palestinians.
And sir, what was that partition plan? What did that state?
Well, in any event, sir, it was rejected, and Israel was attacked. And after the attack was repulsed, then the Palestinians accepted that plan. So it doesn't matter what it stated. The fact is, first they reject it, then they get beaten in the war, then they turn around and accept it.
So what happens is, if they got attacked in a war and they did get rejected, I mean, they were going for the second best thing. They're not, it's not like they went more
Let me ask you this. You're a reasonable man.
Yes,
somebody presents a plan. The other guy says the Israelis accepted the partition. The Palestinians did not. The Arab states did not. They didn't want the Zionists anywhere near them. They rejected it, and they attacked Israel. Now they get beaten in that war, and now they want to go back and say, okay, we'll take that partition plan now because our act of violence against Israel failed.
Right.
What the hell is that? What is that?
I completely understand that, but what caused the act of violence is...
Well, wait a minute. How is it that they're now accepting the partition plan and they didn't originally? I don't understand that.
I think that's generous on the part of the Palestinians to accept anything.
Was it generous to attack Israel and try to kill them? Was that generous?
No. The problem is you're saying that they have attacked the Israelis.
They did not attack.
It was self-defense.
After the war of self-defense, they got defeated by the Israelis, and then after the defeat, then they went back and said, you know what, maybe we don't need self-defense anymore, maybe we'll give the Israelis this land that we didn't want to give them in the first place. No reasonable human being can exist in a mad world like that. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
We've got a couple of things we want to read to you, some news, and this is a paragraph that I 100% agree with and expresses how I feel to the letter. It is a editorial from frontpagemagazine.com, frontpagemagazine.com, and it goes, just this paragraph right here says volumes. The coalition war in Iraq is not a war against a single Arab fascist regime. It is a war against Arab fascism and terrorism in general, a war against Islamist barbarism and aggression, a war of civilization against depraved savagery. That is why the assault against Baghdad must continue to topple the fascist Syrian regime and the Iranian Islamist regime. It is a campaign that must continue to Ramallah and until the Palestinian terrorist leaders are dancing the debka from a yardarm. Beautiful. Beautiful. That's it. That's how I feel, too. 1-800-449-8686. Listen to this. Starbucks Coffee on Tuesday closed all six of its shops in Israel, blaming operational challenges and not the turmoil in the Middle East. The coffee houses were in Tel Aviv and employed about 120 people. In Israel, it was clear to us that this was not a very good time to build the business, Chairman Howard Schultz said Tuesday. Neither Starbucks nor the Delek Group of Israel would disclose why. Analysts said the closings aren't a major setback for the company, which eventually wants to have 25,000 stores worldwide. Starbucks has other outlets in the Middle East, including Bahrain, Lebanon, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, but none in Israel. Why? Because their coffee's lousy. That's why, and because the Israelis have got taste. I mean, when is somebody going to call a spade a spade? Starbucks, next time you put some coffee in my cup, I'm going to die of a heart attack. All you guys give me is foam milk. The gruesome daily images, now this is from the Iranian news agency. The daily gruesome images of Iraqi civilians killed and mutilated by the unmitigated Anglo-American bombing of Iraq are further infuriating Palestinians and deepening their hatred of the United States, Israel, and Britain. You mean it could get deeper? You're kidding. I thought it was deep enough. I mean, walking into a guy's store and blowing himself up, that's about as bad as it gets. How much bad can how much worse does it get? Like, you're giving me a news flash here, like they hate us. Well, you say they hate us. Who hates us, basically, is Hamas and Hezbollah. Well, actually, probably all the Palestinian people, since they're not getting any real information. They don't get any truth. They don't get any uncensored news there at all, unless they're pulling in probably something from Israel, and then they think that that's all propaganda anyway. Many Palestinians are already referring to the three nations as the true axis of evil, as opposed to George Bush's infamous reference to Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. In fact, most Palestinians seem convinced that Israel, through her powerful lobby in the United States, is the prime mover of the Anglo-American invasion of Iraq, the motivation behind the nearly explicit Israeli desire to eradicate the Iraqi threat and consequently facilitate the much-hoped-for Palestinian surrender to Israeli dictates. This brazenly naked aggression is not only aimed at subjugating Iraq, it is also aimed at subduing Palestinian resistance and aspirations for freedom and independence, declared one speaker during a rally in solidarity with Iraq in downtown Al-Khalil this week. Oh, that must have been a very, objective report there from the Iranian news agency. I went out and I got some information from people, and of course he told me what he was going to tell me, otherwise they would have had his genitals connected to a car battery. Who knows what the Palestinian people think? Nobody knows. I don't know what they think. I know what that Ringling Brothers clown Yasser Arafat thinks. I know what Hezbollah and Hamas think. I don't know what the Palestinian people think. Nobody's ever told me what the Palestinian people think. The average Palestinian person. How he feels about his leadership. That's what I'd like to know. Forget about how he feels about Israel. Maybe he hates Israel, maybe he doesn't. What I would love to know, really know, is how the Palestinian people think of their leadership. Because if you disagree with the leadership over there, as you know, you are shot and you're hung from a lamppost. This is civilization Palestinian style. I don't think the Palestinian people want that, but I do believe that their leaders do, and the Palestinian people live under a reign of terror. Not imposed by Israel, it's imposed by the Palestinian Authority and their partners in Hamas and Hezbollah. Now, that's the truth. Otherwise, show me the free elections in the West Bank. Show me the free elections in the Palestinian Authority. I mean, really free elections. And then show me the money that's pouring into the West Bank and into the Palestinian Authority that is building homes, that's building roads, that's building schools, that's building shops, that is devoted to the construction of a culture, not devoted to the destruction of Israel. Show me the effort made. What's the only effort that's being made right now in Palestine, so-called, is this futile war against Israel. Futile. Here is Vanessa on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Vanessa.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes. I'm Vanessa from Boynton Beach, and I'm not Jewish, and I'm not Arab. I'm actually Hispanic, and I'm a Roman Catholic myself. And the only thing I wanted to express is that, you know, I don't agree with the Palestinian suicide bombings or any of that, but I do feel what they must be feeling. I mean, I almost feel what they're feeling. I mean, I think that they feel sort of oppressed, and I think that their leadership needs to go. I think that as soon as they're done with this war in Iraq, they need to go and take care of that. Because I think they feel like nobody cares about them. You know, it's like everyone's always standing up for the Israelis, and I also come from a backgrounds that originated from Jews, so you know, I'm not being in any way prejudiced. You know, it's just that I think that someone needs to get in there and see what they really want and get rid of their leadership.
Well, I mean, you know, the problem with the Palestinian people has been their leadership, and in my opinion, the leadership of the entire Arab world has been corrupt. And has been, they have done more to damage the Palestinian people than anything Israel's ever done.
Right.
Anything that Israel's ever done. So I totally agree with you. I don't know how the United States militarily could go in and actually do something. If you kill a guy like Yasser Arafat, the Israelis know this, the guy turns into a martyr, and then you've got nothing but hell to pay. You've got Hamas and Hezbollah, these terror organizations. Israel right now, in my opinion, is doing what they have to do. They're taking out what they think are terror cells, militants, so on and so forth. It's being turned around and being presented to the world as this occupational fascist force from Israel that's oppressing the poor Palestinian people. And as long as the Palestinian people are being lied to by their own leadership, as long as they do not have, you know, as long as they really don't have anybody advocating for them, and they don't, they're always going to be living in a state of squalor. And the squalor that they live in today is not the result of Israel. It's the direct criminal result of their leadership and the leadership of the other Arab states who pretend to care about them, but in point of fact simply want to get rid of Israel because Israel represents Western influence in their holy, sacred, far-out, groovy part of the freaking world. And after all, the Moors of old invaded Europe and the great kings of Babylon and yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. What have you done lately? And the 700-year caliphate and the grand Islamic republics and the this and the that. You know something? I mean, there was a time when I had hair, too, man. I got to move on, right? I used to be skinny and I had hair. But guess what? I'm bald now and I'm fat. I got to just move on and make the best of it. And I would suggest to the Arab states that they move on and make the best of it. Build a society. Build something for your people, for God's sake. Take some of that oil money and begin to put together a society that's egalitarian, a society that is not based upon hatred. The only societies in the world that I see that are literally based upon hatred are these fascist regimes in the Middle East. Good God Almighty, put your children into schools and teach them how to be human beings and citizens, not chanting death to Israel. What the hell is wrong with you? You spend 50 freaking years trying to drive Israel into the ocean, and you've degraded your own countries as a result. And all you can do is point a finger. It's Israel's fault, Israel's fault. Anti-Islam? I ain't anti-Islam. I'm anti-Islamist. That's the fascist theocracies based on Islam that operate right now in the Middle East. And you can take that brand of Islam, and you can pound it. And Muhammad, too. But for 50-plus years, all they know how to do is drive their people from one war to the next, one state of conflict to the next, because they are the most decrepit, corrupt thieves I've ever seen in my life. Saddam Hussein cares about his people? That's a hot one. That guy's got more money, more palaces. He's got more places to hide it, more places to hide himself. He could care less. But you think he's unique? Same thing with that cat in Syria. Who's that guy? That Assad. Same thing down in Saudi Arabia with that royal family. Same thing with a king in Jordan. Same thing with a dictator in Egypt. I don't care if that guy's so-called friend of the United States. Egypt is teeming with people that hate this country. Well, you want to do something? Right back at you, baby. Right back at you. All right, 1-800-449-8686. You're listening to the Phil Hendry Show, continuing coverage, continuing comments on the war in Iraq, a war that eventually will be victorious. And then let's see who's lining up to get the drippings from the trough. When we liberate Baghdad and we desperately try to put into place a civilized regime there, watch all the people that try to tear us down. Watch all the people that try to make it unsuccessful. Watch all the people that, instead of trying to bring the Iraqi people some semblance of an egalitarian democratic society, watch all the people that say it can't be done, all the people that are going to try to suicide bombing still, all the people that are going to try to tear it down one way or another. Watch everybody stand on the sidelines again. It's the Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
And now more on the Phil Hendry Show.
You know, here, this is what I'm talking about. USA Today, Baghdad attack timing, unclear. Well, okay, is that bad? Is that good? It's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Personally, let me just get this out in the open right now. This American here, this American talking to you right now, I'm not sitting here waiting for a quick finish to this. Can I just clear the air about that? If it takes months, that's okay with me. Months. A year. Hey, you want to know something? If we can't get this thing done in a year, I would say that I would be happy if it went 4 years. But if we can't get it done in a year, I'd say there's something seriously wrong with the armed forces of the United States. But be that as it may, I mean, we could achieve the goal, which is absolute, you know, don't kill any civilians. We won't kill any civilians. I'm sure Saddam will feed them into a meat grinder. He'll just feed them into the meat grinder one after the other. He doesn't care. He'll feed those Palestinians coming in, too, by the way. That's the ultimate dumb thing. Can you think of anything dumber? Is there anything on earth today that is dumber than a Palestinian going into Iraq to fight for Saddam Hussein? But he'll feed them into the meat grinder too. This is one American. I'm not waiting for it to be over in a few weeks. We're going to do the job as long as it takes, and USA Today and Fox and all the rest of them can go and find a hobby. Maybe get out of the news business and take in cleaning. Take in ironing. When will it happen? When's the attack on Baghdad? Is it going to be days away? Is it weeks away? I've laid in a supply of Coors Light. I mean, I've got chips and dip. Jesus. All right, let's go to Eddie. Eddie, hello, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, Phil.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was calling. I just turned on your radio, man. Why are you so racist against the Middle Eastern region?
I don't know, Eddie. Why do you molest children?
Why do I molest children?
Yes, sir. Is there a reason for that?
Hold on, buddy. I don't molest children. I mean,
well, I'm
I
not racist. I'm not.
I'm not racist
against. You're a child molester. You're a child molester. If you want to have a conversation,
you're a child molester.
No, you're a child molester.
You're
a child molester. You're a racist. You're racist. You hate black people, Eddie.
I hate who?
You hate blacks.
I hate blacks.
Black people. Yeah, you can't stand them.
I can't stand black people.
Right, I know. Yeah, it's really bad, too.
What are you talking about? I mean,
I'm talking about all your friends. Your friends have been calling all day long saying this guy Eddie in Miami is a freaking black-hating racist. He hates Africans. He can't, all of them, all day long. All day long. And they said he's going to call up. They said if some dumb guy calls from Miami. No, all of your racist friends.
About black racist, and I'm a black racist.
You are.
I mean, where, what, who are you?
I mean, who are you, man? To call this show, you racist?
Who are you?
You're a freaking Klansman. You're a Klansman.
And you're a racist.
What member of the Klan, what part of the Klan do you belong to?
I am not a Klan.
You are a Klansman because your friends have been calling. Your friends called all day and said you're in the Klan.
Wow, my friends called all day.
Yeah, all day long said you're a freaking Klan member.
How many Arabs do you know, Phil?
Huh? How many Arabs do I know? I used to have sex with a Persian woman.
You know what?
I had an Iranian girlfriend once. But
yeah, good for you.
Yeah, see?
Congratulations. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's probably better than what you've had lately.
I'm glad.
From
better than what
your
I
girlfriends have
you
been,
saying?
The women that know you have been calling all day saying that you are so lousy in the sack.
Well, you guess what, Phil? The guy that
and
you've
on
with,
top of that, some of your boyfriends called up and said you're a fag.
I'm a fag.
Yeah.
Wow, Phil.
I know. I can't believe it either, but that's what they said.
I didn't know we were going to talk about high school or junior high. I'm a fag now. I hate
you've been a fag since junior high?
I'm a child molester.
Well, sir, you're a racist against blacks. What's wrong with you that you molest children? What's wrong with you molest children, Eddie? Eddie in Miami is a child molester. Eddie in Miami is a child molester.
And Phil on AM 610 is.
And by the way, Eddie, quit hitting your wife too, and quit hitting women.
You're a child molester.
Quit beating women too. Quit beating women too. All these women are calling saying you beat. I get out of here. Guy calls up, starts calling me names. I thought that's what the name of the game was. 1-800-449-8686. British troops have discarded their helmets and put on their berets in a number of areas in Iraq. The order has been issued to soldiers. And so it kind of shows the Iraqi people that they're not all out there to fight the war every day. It's a part of this Hearts and Minds campaign to win the confidence of the Iraqi people. This Winning the Hearts and Minds campaign, this is a term that it was originated in during the Vietnam War. And it had very negative repercussion because we were never able to win the hearts and the minds totally of the Vietnamese people. And the reason for that, as I've always said, the Vietnamese people saw the American troops as a bigger threat than their leadership in Vietnam. The Iraqi people see Saddam Hussein as a bigger threat than the Americans and the Brits. That's why this war is going to be way different from Vietnam. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686.